Welcome back to the SCBWI podcast. I'm your host, Theo Baker, and on today's episode, I talk to illustrator and picture bookmaker, Debbie Ridpath-Owie. Debbie is a longtime and beloved member of SCBWI. She started as a computer programmer, and after years and years on the grind, working on her craft, finally got her break as a picture book creator, and making illustrations for all sorts of middle grade books. Debbie is the writer and illustrator of Where Are My Books?, Sam and Eva, and the forthcoming I Want to Read All the Books. She's also the illustrator for the incredibly popular I'm Bored, I'm Sad, I'm Sorry, I'm Worried books written by Michael Ian Black. She's also illustrated covers for the one and only Judy Blume. I talked with Debbie in person at the New York Winter Conference. We discussed her path, cartoons, community, making kid-centric books, and always pushing forward with positivity and creativity. I hope you enjoy. Here's my first question, and it's a question I ask most people. If you could, just in any way you want, and you can answer this however you want to, just tell us a little bit about where you come from.
So I was born in Toronto, and my mother was born in Japan. My father was born in Vancouver. I found out that they first met in person at the airport, which I thought was really strange. And my mother said that she was introduced to my father as a pen pal when a missionary came to Japan. And so they started corresponding. And the first time she actually met him in person was when she came to Toronto to marry him. And so when I found that out, I was blown away. I mean, she left her family and her friends. So I wish she was alive now. She passed away when she was 50. Because if she was alive now, I would love to ask her all kinds of questions. Like, was it hard leaving? Were you scared? What was it like? Because English was not her first language. Sorry, I'm digressing now.
No, okay, this is fascinating.
Okay, so I grew up in Toronto, and then I think through a special government plan or program, my father and my mother could afford a house in the outskirts of Toronto in a place called Bramalea. I think it's part of Brampton now. And our house was constructed there. I remember going to school, slogging through the mud and rainy weather and stuff like that. And then I remember through all of school, I was almost pretty much always the only non-Caucasian person. It was very, very rare. But I don't really notice. It was really strange because, I don't know, I came across it occasionally. I came across a little bit of racism occasionally, but I didn't really recognize it as racism back then. Then I moved to Toronto after I graduated from university. Oh, yeah, I grew up in a lower middle income family. So we couldn't really afford to put me in residence when I was going to University of Toronto for a computer science degree. Mm. So I commuted from home every day. And it was a slog, but I didn't mind it. I would read, I would sleep. It was really hard when it was snowy weather because it took a long time to get back and forth. And then after I graduated, my first official job was a computer programmer analyst for TD. That was a long time ago because I programmed in COBOL. Wow. I'm not sure if you've ever heard COBOL. Yes. And I was told that around Y2K, I could have made a lot of money. But I worked there for 2 years as a systems programmer. And I enjoyed aspects of programming. I enjoy the creative aspects. But I looked down the long corridor of where my life was going, and I wasn't that happy because even though I liked some of the people, I wasn't crazy about the work. I felt like I was working on one little tiny cog of a huge, huge machine. And then my husband, who was then my boyfriend, said, like, he always knew I wanted to be a writer. Illustration hadn't even crossed the horizon at all. I wanted to write books for young people. And so he said, well, I will support you so you could pursue your creative dream. So why don't you quit your corporate job? And so, yes, I owe him a lot. After working there for 2 years, I quit. It was a very, It was hard quitting because it was well paying and everything, but oh my gosh, I was so much happier. And so I took on odd jobs. I worked in a children's bookstore, which I loved. I worked part-time for the Toronto Public Library. And I worked on improving my writing. Mm. I also, through a friend, Lee Wardlaw, found my agent. Oh, yeah, I have to tell you this. Because Lee Wardlaw is a California area children's book author. And she told me about this organization called SCBWI. And I went, oh, I never heard of that. And I was really scared, nervous. And so she said, well, why don't you come to one? I'll introduce you to people. So I went. People were really friendly. It was a little bit expensive for me, and I was so intimidated. So even though I had a great time, years passed, and I did not go back. I really regret that. But then I just thought, you know what? If I just work really hard on my craft and I keep sending in those manuscripts, something will happen. And while that works for some people, it wasn't happening for me. Even with an agent, a wonderful agent. So I decided, you know, I need to start meeting people in person. And that idea terrified me. I don't know if you're an introvert. Are you an introvert?
Very introverted. Yeah.
So just the idea of having to introduce myself to people I didn't know over and over again, it terrified me. But I thought, you know, I really, really want this. And so let's see what happens. So I went. I think the first year, I can't remember the first year I went, was 89, I can't remember. And it was fun. I was terrified, but, you know, I found everyone was very, very friendly. And I especially appreciate people like Patricia Murphy, mm-hmm. who is a published professional. And even though I was totally unknown and she didn't know me. And even now, Patricia's really good at reaching out to newbies and people who look a bit lone. And she said, why don't you come to the Golden Kite ceremony with me? And she invited other newbies and we all got to know each other. And I thought, you know, people are friendly here. So the following year, I think I entered the manuscript critique consult and the editor, you know, I wasn't sure if she liked my manuscript or not, so I was a little bit discouraged. But then I decided to come back the next year. It was really expensive, but my husband said, come on, we can afford it. You have to do this. You have to pursue your dreams. So I went back, and that was the year that I thought, you know what? I'm going to enter my manuscript again. It's an illustrated manuscript. And at that time, I'm not sure if the illustrated chapter books had illustrated mail grade had taken off or not. And I was so excited and I worked really, really hard on it. And then I mailed it in. Actually, I paid for it to be couriered to the SCBWI head office just in time. And meanwhile, in my head, I'm sort of dreaming, oh my gosh, I'm going to get a phone call from an editor who thought, I can't wait. I have to tell you, I wanted to offer you a book deal. And I did get a phone call. It was from the SCBWI head office. And it was to tell me, unfortunately, they had to reject my manuscript because it had illustrations in it. Because although this was my fault, I didn't read the print that said no artwork. And so it might have even have been Kim Teresi, I'm not sure. But whoever it was said, well, maybe you can submit your art separately. But it was a kind of middle grade book that had art embedded in it. So I thought I was really, really depressed. And I thought, okay, I can't even pay to be rejected. But then I was with my friend. Her name is Beckett Gladney. And she helped me put together my very first portfolio. She also made this gorgeous portfolio cover for me. We were rooming together at the SCBWI. And she said, you have to enter the portfolio showcase. You've been drawing for ages. And I thought, oh, I can't do that. I have no art degree, no art training. And I'm not really, you know, a professional artist, but she kind of strong-armed me into it. And my sister encouraged me. My husband encouraged me. So I remember the night before the portfolio showcase, my friend had spread out. She had picked out the pieces of art from my Flickr account because I didn't even have a portfolio. Remember Flickr? Yeah. Spread the printouts on the hotel room floor, picked up together we worked at putting together my first portfolio. And she made this gorgeous cover. It just floors my mind all this is happening. And so the next day, I remember being so embarrassed that my art was there amongst all the amazing other artists' work, that I wasn't even there when the winners were announced. Mm. And so I showed up late, and my friend came up to me and said, your portfolio is up on the table. I went, what? And then I'm sure it was Priscilla who came up to me. I didn't know Priscilla then. And she said, where were you? We were calling your name. And it turned out that I had won, not the top award, but the honor awards. I was in shock. And also a mentorship award. And it turns out Cecilia Young was the art director who chose my portfolio as her pick for the mentorship award. And I was absolutely in shock. Even now when I think about that, I remember, like, it was, I'm not sure what clinical shock is, but my head was filled with a sound, and I thought, must be a dream. Yeah. And then later on, Alice Pope, who was working for the SCBWI then, says, hey, Justin Chanda. I think Alice Pope may have been on the jury, I'm not sure. And Justin Chanda of Simon Schuster is looking for you. And I went, what? I was looking for him, but I didn't really know how to introduce myself. And I remember I sat in the front row of a panel I knew he was on. But so I saw him. He didn't know who I was. I was so, so nervous about approaching him. But my seatmates, whom I introduced myself to, because, you know, you always try to introduce yourself to new people, I told them my story, and they said, you should do it. You should. So with their encouragement, I went up and introduced myself, and then he told me, I think I have a picture book for you to illustrate. And it was just like, oh. And that was Michael Ian Black's picture book, I'm Bored. And that was my very first children's book contract. So ever since then, I've done I'm Bored, and I'm Sad, and I'm Worried, and I'm Sorry. I think that's, and then there's another one coming soon that I'm very excited about. And all of it, I owe the SCBWI so much.
Wow. And I want to thank you for bringing up a couple names in the SCBWI who don't always get Patricia Wiles, Priscilla Burns.
Yeah, and Kim Teresi.
You know, who do so much to kind of connect people and to connect people. You know, even though Kim probably rejected the illustrated manuscript.
No, but that was perfect.
That was okay.
Yeah, that was okay. That was okay.
You got to follow the submission guidelines.
So at that point, I realized that I remember at that time, you could not enter both the portfolio showcase and the manuscript critique. So if my manuscript had been accepted, I would not have entered the portfolio showcase, and none of the amazing awesomeness that has happened and you would have happened. So I always remind people, and I still go through, you know, work rejection and stuff like that. You never know what a rejection is going to, even though one door closes, you never know what doors are going to open. So because of that rejection, so I'm grateful to Kim for for rejecting the manuscript, because the portfolio showcase and all the picture book thing, all the picture book amazingness may not have happened.
You got to play the game to get some wins.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there's so much there I want to talk about. But one thing you were talking about is saying, introducing yourself to people.
Yes.
And that is such a courageous thing to do, because to say to yourself, all right, I owe it to myself, right? That's what you said.
Right.
I owe it to myself.
Yes.
I have to put a face to the name.
Right.
It's easy. I have to find the people I'm going to connect with.
Yes.
Right. I have to get the network effect going.
Right.
You know, so what did you have to, and then I'm going to talk about the art and everything, but I wanted, that was jumping out of me. What did you have to do to say, okay, I might not like this the first time I try it, but did you have to do to get better at it and to keep doing it?
I kept thinking of my goals, you know, I even remember, because I've always been an introvert and I have had trouble with public speaking, and I been so nervous about introducing myself to people. So I, even when I was working on my novels, working really hard before I had an agent, I remember loving the writing process so much, but thinking, oh my gosh, what if this is actually published and I have to start talking about it? And that idea terrified me, but I thought, oh, but I really, really love the process. And so I won't worry about that till it happens. And so I've also learned that it is good for me to try stepping out of my comfort zone every once in a while, you know, because if I never try that, like purposely seeking to step out of my comfort zone's not going to, you know, get larger. There are times I'll fall flat in my face, but every time that happens and I pick myself up again and keep going, that makes me stronger. So that's why it actually drives me a little bit crazy when people come up to me now and say, oh, it's so easy for you. It must be so great. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, no idea how hard I worked at this. And it just takes practice. And also it's a huge help that the Kid Lit community, especially the SCBWI community, so warm and friendly. And we're all like, I don't care what stage each of us is at during our career. We all have some kind of, you know, insecurities and, oh my gosh, you know, like if you're a new writer, am I going to have any publications? Or if you're, you know, mid-list writer, oh, why aren't my books best-selling list? Or if you're a really established writer, but you haven't had that much come out
yet.
When
will I ever get another one?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And that's a lesson. But even if I had told my younger self to appreciate being a pre-published writer, I would have said, I don't care, I want a contract. You know, it's a learning process.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. Everyone is insecure. And the thing that it's difficult to realize about other people is that they kind of want you to tell them who you are and what you have, especially at networking events.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
You think, yeah, you have this thing that you say, well, they don't want to hear about me.
Yeah.
Well, no, they're at a networking event.
Yeah.
For you to kind of,
yeah, and
be assertive.
Yes, and something else I learned also, I remember having a negative reaction to the word networking at
mm-hmm.
first, like kind of schmoozing, networking. But I have learned that networking can be fun if you're authentic. Like, don't try to, you know, be friends with everybody or only connect with people who are published or who can help you. Connect with everybody. And I know that sounds kind of airy-fairy, but it's so true. I find that the people that I still remember people that were friendly to me before I got published. You know, because that meant a lot. And so I try to, it's all about passing it forward in the community, I think. So I've had people come to me this weekend saying, oh my gosh, you're so supportive of everybody. But I keep thinking, yeah, but it's because of people earlier on that supported me when I really needed it. I still need support sometimes, and I try to pass it forward as well. And I really find this community, especially the Kid Lit community, is really, really good at that.
Yeah, thank you for mentioning that. And because, right, there can be this sort of divide, and like, it's pretty easy for someone to, like, if you're pre-published, to be like, you're not in the club.
Yes.
And
boy, yeah, exactly.
That can be brutal.
Yeah.
If everything you've ever wanted is to be in the club.
Yes.
But there's no clubs, you know?
Exactly, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Just because you're pre-published doesn't mean you're not in the club.
Yes, yeah.
You know, you're working just like you're doing the same work that a published person is.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
So tell me, okay, so one thing in your history that I was looking for is you said, well, at some point I learned how to draw.
No.
Okay. And you didn't really give that the attention that I'd like to hear about. You're like, I didn't go to art school, and
yeah.
then I just kind of like got an honorable mention at a portfolio. Okay, tell me about drawing.
Well, I still feel kind of self-conscious about my art compared to other amazing artists because I have no art training. But the fact is plus I have a very simple drawing style, but I've always loved to draw. I think I went to visit my father who lives in a senior home right now, and he has a piece of furniture that still has this crayoned happy face on it. And I said, I remember seeing it, and I looked familiar. I said, did I do that? And he said, yeah, you did it. And I vaguely remember getting in a lot of trouble because I just like drawing everywhere. And my mom was an artist, like not a professional artist, but she loved to draw. I remember one of my favorite times when she and my sister and brother would sit at the table, and we'd all have paper out, and she'd draw, and we'd draw. And so I think my mom was a huge influence. My parents were also a huge influence in my love of reading as well. So combining the love of art and reading, I think that it didn't even cross my mind that picture books would be a possibility. But okay, so I see I'm digressing. So art, I just loved to draw all the time. I hate coloring. Actually, just today I attended Cece Bell's graphic novel, and I love her so much. Anyway, so she mentioned she hates drawing. Still exactly the same way. So I remember I would draw, you know, princesses and all kinds of things from my classmates to color, my friends to color, because I hated the coloring part. I also did a lot of comics. I've always loved drawing comics.
Did you read comics?
Yes.
What did you
I read Archie and Mad Magazine Plop and kind of Twisted Comics, but also any, and I remember my family, my father and my mother used to take us for summer vacations, like car trips every summer, and we would load up on comics. Comics and books, but we were very much into comics. Yeah. And so I started doing comic strips on my own just for the family, and then the school newspaper. I remember I won a comic contest. I can't remember. It was called something called Sunshine News. It was Cross Canada. And the prize was a typewriter. So excited. It was a manual, the old manual typewriter. And then I started doing comics when I got older. I remember when the Lord of the Rings movies, have you seen them?
Of course. 400 times.
And so I thought, in preparation for that, I am going to finally read Lord of the Rings. Because I had tried when I was in school, but I couldn't get past the prologue. So I thought, this time I'm going to try and I'm going to blog about it, because I was one of the first bloggers. And because I liked the interaction. So I started blogging about it. And one website called theonering.net, they found out about my comic, and all of a sudden I had so many people commenting, hundreds and hundreds of comics, and it was wonderful. My friend Allison would sometimes look at the comments and say, make sure you don't look at the comments or spoilers and everything. And then, oh yeah, I remember early on they told me, just skip the prologue. Skip the prologue the first time you read it. And that worked. After I skipped the prologue, I actually got really into Lord of the Rings, and I blogged about all three books. And I heard one person even did an academic paper on the community that came up around my blog. And after that, I was kind of, you know, I was kind of sad it was over. I need to do a comic strip. So I did a comic strip called Waiting for Frodo. Please don't look it up. The art's horrible. and it's all about very, very avid fans waiting in line for the Lord of the Rings movies. And I had so much fun. I put a Harry Potter fan in there and some other fans, and they'd have conversations. And the people at Weta found out about the comic, and I made a friend there, and they sent me a free crew t-shirt, and I put them in the comic, and they sent me a photo of the crew there. And all this, like, later on, in retrospect, I looked at my art, and it is really horrible, but I didn't care at that time. This is before I was a published artist. And what I that lesson was, it's more important, like, for me, it was more important to connect with people rather than worry about technical perfection.
Do they like it?
Yes. Do they like it?
Do you like me?
Yeah. but not even me. I wanted them to connect with the characters.
Yeah.
So that was a useful lesson that's stayed with me. I remember there was a mother and her child who had, I had Waiting for Frodo merchandise that I had. They sent me a photo in line for the Lord of the Rings movie with wearing Waiting for Frodo. It was just me. But the community, I've always loved communities and online community. And so even though I haven't met all these people that I've been interacting with, I just, as an introvert, I have to say I was more comfortable interacting and talking with like hundreds and hundreds and probably more people than talking in person in front of like 20 live people. I've improved since then, but I've always loved communities.
We've been talking with illustrator and book creator Debbie Ridpath-Owie. We've got a lot more coming up after the break, but in the meantime, be sure to bookmark a pre-order for her upcoming picture book, I Want to Read All the Books, coming out in September of 2024 from Simon & Schuster. And be sure to check out her website at debbie.ridpath-owie.com. oe.com. Debbie is all over the internet commenting and supporting and spreading joy and humor and community. So be sure to give her a follow wherever you socialize on the internets. Okay, let's get back to part two.
I love what you're saying about not caring. And because as an untrained, quote unquote, like, okay, a trained artist might say, all right, I'm going to put this in two-point perspective and I'm going to lay it out here. And you're kind of working with, like, what you're seeing.
Right.
And I love what you say about not caring, because what I'm trying to do is connect.
Yes.
And that's, at the end of the day, especially a kid.
Yes.
Yeah. They're not going to care if, you know, it's rendered properly.
Right. Yeah. Right. But having said that,
okay,
I still count on my art director to look at it and say, oh, well, you know, like to help me improve. Or if the character is inconsistent. One thing I love working with Simon Schuster, like I work with Laurent Lin, who's my art director, and my editor's Justin Chanda, who was the one who discovered me at that SCBW convention. I love that, and I'm sure other publishers work the same way, but I'm especially appreciative of this team because they never try to make me change how I draw. They just help me. Like, the whole focus is on making the best book as possible for the child reader.
Mm-hmm.
And so once I started to clue into that, that really helped me a lot become less self-conscious about technical perfection. Because I have to confess something to you. Like, when I was first, you know, the I'm Bored was my first children's book illustration. It was fantastic. I was so excited. And then suddenly I sat down and I went, oh my gosh, now I have to draw professionally. And so I remember when I handed in my first round of sketches, Laurent and Justin said they wanted to have a phone call with me. And I expected them to say, oh, it's fantastic and everything. But they were very nice about it. But what they were basically saying is, you know, we love your art, but we could tell you're trying to be too perfect.
Mm.
We fell in love with what was in your portfolio. And in my portfolio were a lot of pieces that I just whipped, like, not whip off, but just had fun with.
Yeah.
It was just for fun. And so I realized I needed to start, you know, not focusing so much on the technical perfection, but all, like, focus on, again, making a good book for the young reader. Like, that's more important. And also, in terms of my own craft, I started realizing there was an importance to always set aside regular time for play, no matter how crazy things, you know, like, things are happening, because all of a sudden my art was so precious. Like, oh, I don't waste that. I don't want to waste my precious art. I have to save that. No. So I got a whole bunch of cheap paper. Well, because in the beginning I thought, oh, well, I'm a professional artist now. I need expensive paper, expensive art supplies. You know, I work on the computer, but still. But a lot of that expensive paper is still literally sitting in my office because I don't want to waste it.
No, I know that.
So I use printer paper, lined paper, scrap paper, and I just scribble. So that way I don't have to feel like I'm wasting paper. And that's actually how I work with found object art a lot. And that's how that began, actually, because with found object art, like food, I began with food, you can't really keep that. It's sort of ephemeral art, which means there's less pressure to be perfect. And that's what I love teaching found or working with kids, young artists, on ephemeral art, because there's so much pressure on a lot of young kids these days. And I remember during one school visit, it just breaks my heart to think of it. It's still, I think it was a 5-year-old girl came up to me in line and she said, I can't draw. I don't draw well. And I'm just thinking, how, like, she's 5.
How,
like,
could she know that?
When we're all young, we are so proud of our art. We just show it, you know, but somewhere along the way, some of us get encouragement and some of us get discouraged, or someone, you know, makes a hurtful comment, you know, intentionally or unintentionally, and that convinces us all, you know, a lot of us that we can't draw.
Yeah.
You know, well, even me earlier on, I can't really draw because I still feel self-conscious of it. But.
Well, there's that thing with, like, all right, you start with a blank piece of paper and you're going to say, I'm going to draw this on this piece of paper. That
yes.
sounds terrifying to me.
Yeah.
You know, that's a terrifying thing because
yeah.
you're just staring your own limitations
yes.
right in the face before you've even started.
Right. Yeah.
And I like what you're talking about, the ephemeral art, because you're the food art. you're working with something that's already there. You've got to make do with this kind of moldy looking thing or whatever. How can I improvise?
Yes, exactly.
If you have a white piece of paper and you draw something and you say, well, it didn't live up to what I wanted to.
Yes, right, yeah.
You know, yeah. Then you just get stiff.
Yes, yeah.
Forever. And so that's how you keep it loose. And
yeah. And also make time for creative play and
throwing things away. I like what you tell me about that.
Yeah, I take a picture, you know, just so I have, but then I'll either eat the piece of, you know, like I've done school. That's another thing, school visits. I have learned, like, one reason I love talking to kids, and I book visits throughout their village, but I love talking to kids because it reminds me of what's really important. Like, obviously, we want to make a living in it, everything. But whenever I get too caught up in the politics or the business or rejections or terrible reviews or anything, even just talking to kids, and I don't have kids, so the only way I can talk to kids without being creepy about it is actually through school visits. I can't hang around playgrounds and start sketching them or like, but, you know, is talking to kids because they're so honest. If you're not interesting, they will let you know. If they don't like your art, they will let you know. They're so honest. And it kind of, I find that refreshing. So whenever I feel very low about my work or anything, I really do find that talking to kids, unfortunately, all my nieces and nephews are too old now.
Yeah. So. Well, there's that fun, I always find that's really fun. Like, you're in your room, you're working on something, and then you bring it to the kids and you're like, you don't even have to like open your mouth or show it to them.
Right.
You can be like, oh, of course. You don't even have to like go through that whole thing of being like, do you like it?
Right.
You can just say, oh, right. No. Let me get rid of these three paragraphs of description.
Yes. Yeah.
Here.
Yeah.
Let's, you know, because there's this as a sort of friendly person who connects with children,
mm-hmm.
you know what they're going to like when you get into a room with them.
Yes.
You know? And you know, just by getting onto their level.
Yeah.
And connecting with that, who you are.
Right.
As a child.
Yeah.
You know exactly what they're going to like and what they're not
going to like. But kids can surprise you sometimes. I remember I was talking about where are my books. Which is...
Thank you for that segue. I was just about to bring up... I just circled Where Are My Books.
So Where Are My Books is my first solo picture book. Very, very excited to do that. And it's about...
Written by and illustrated.
Yeah, it's written by and illustrated. And I came up with the idea during Tara Lazar's Picture Book Idea Month, which is now Story Storm. And in that challenge, you're supposed to come up with a picture book idea every day. And I love that. And it just forces you to just brainstorm. You don't have to share it. And so one of the ideas I came up with in this, I have tons of idea notebooks, was squirrels steal boys' books. And because I've always had this love-hate, well, mostly hate thing with squirrels. And so I just want to involve squirrels somehow. And so I have learned, though, not to leap on an idea right away. I like it, let it marinate, I like let it sit, and then I come back to it, and I see if I still like it. Because it's easy to come up with ideas, I think, but it's once you come up, once you start working on a book takes a long time, so you want to be really, really sure you're excited about it. So anyway, so I started working on it. I did some drafts. I had a critique by my awesome critique group. And then I sent it and some other picture book manuscripts to my editor, Simon Schuster, and he chose that one. I just love the collaborative process so much. I admire those who are confident enough to self-publish or whatever. I just love the collaboration process too much. And so my editor helped me, you know, fine-tune it, develop it, asked me what my vision was, it involved squirrels. And so... he always has trouble with squirrels because he has a sky garden that sometimes the squirrels eat all his vegetables. Anyway, so we bond over squirrels.
They're a weird in-between animal. They're not quite a rat, and they're not...
Yes.
We have this weird kind of detente with them.
Yes.
They're not going to bother us too much.
Well, okay. Remind me to come back to the publication. I have to tell you, my original that squirrel thing is... Back in university, when I was working on my computer science degree, in first year university, I took an animal behavior course because that was something I've always been fascinated about animals. And as my assignment, I took on squirrels in Queen's Park in Toronto. And in Queen's Park in Toronto, I didn't realize the squirrels are very aggressive. And so I went in with a bag of peanuts, really innocent. And I'm not exaggerating when I say I ended up running out of there with one squirrel clinging to my leg. And honestly, and with a bag of peanuts, throwing peanuts behind me. So I told my friends, they mocked me incessantly. And so even like for years after, even now, I get squirrel themed cups, mugs, presents, everything. And so squirrels are sort of part of my persona. And also I have on Facebook, if you look up squirrels are evil and taking over the world, that's my Facebook page, mainly because people kept sending me incidents about squirrels and stuff. And that's what
they're breaking the detente, the human.
Cut off our internet, probably on purpose. They cut off our power. Squirrels are after me, but they are kind of cute. Like, I don't wish them any harm. So anyway, okay, publication. Where My Books came out, and it's all about a little boy who loves to read so much, because I've always loved reading, but then he wakes up and he finds out there's a book missing, and then another book. Every morning a book is missing, but something's in its place, either a little nut or a flower or something, and he says, I am going to find out what's happening to my books. And so he takes a string, because he's a smart kid, and he ties it around his favorite narwhal stuffed toy, and the other one around the last book. And then in the morning he sees the string disappear, and he follows, and then he realizes, and then he follows it through a hedge, and there's squirrels are reading his books, because every night at bedtime reading, squirrels were outside his window listening to him either reading to his little sister or his parents and everything. So when I went on a book tour, and I was talking to some kids in a school, and there's always a Q&A. So I love the questions from kindergarten to grade one, because you never know what they're going to say. And one of them put up their hand and say, oh, I have a question. And there's a little girl saying, can squirrels hurt you? And I could immediately sense all the teachers like, oh no, what's it? You know? And I said, of course not. Squirrels are very fun. But immediately the little boy beside her said, yes, they can. I read in the news. Or my parents read in the news, and I changed the topic. But so I had to. So all this is to say that one of the things I love about talking to kids is they're so honest that you don't know what they're going to ask. You don't know what's on their mind. They are much more imaginative than we are. So I get inspired by them.
They might have heard somewhere that squirrels carry rabies, and that, like, you know, and that's what they're thinking about, like these weird kind of fear. They have so many strange fears.
Yes.
We're not even, like, we'll say, oh, don't worry about that.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Well, that's easy for you
to
say.
Good luck, old person. This is all I'm thinking about.
Yeah.
That I'm going to get rabies from squirrels. tell me about Sam and Eva and how that came about.
For Sam and Eva, I've always liked, one of my favorite books was Harold and the Purple Crayon. I love the idea of art coming to life. I also love creative collaboration, as I've mentioned before. And I used to do a lot of art collabs with my nieces and nephews. So I came up with the idea of two little kids who love to draw, but they each have their own style, and one wants to, you know, be friendly, and the other one, no, I want to do it on my own. And then their drawings come to life, and they start having a conflict. They start going attacking each other, you know, not really hurting each other and stuff like that. And then the kids realize, oh, wait a second, this has gotten out of hand. We need to calm things down and start, you know, working together. And so they crawl through into this new, it's a blank canvas area, and then I've shortened it a lot again, but they end up, you know, collaborating happily together.
Yeah.
But I had so much fun making the smaller stories in the art as it came alive, and all the characters, and I just really am fond of Sam and Eve. And
yeah, it's a magical little book, and just
thank you.
It keeps unraveling.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, and you can tell, like, you had so much fun.
Thanks. And I have collaborated with schools along Sam and Eva. What I do is I'll take some of my recycling before I put in recycling, like parts of cardboard boxes or paper bags. In schools that sign up, I will put some art, like either, you know, an animal head or a wing or something or an eye. I'll send it to that school, and that school will collaborate, will have some of their students collaborate on a larger piece of art with my art as part of it. And it's just awesome. So I love the creativity of the kids. I love the energy and the enthusiasm of the teachers that put that together.
Yeah.
But that's one of my favorite kinds of collaboration.
Well, because you get it back.
Yes, exactly.
Like, you can never, I think that's so cool when people do that, because you've made the book, you've worked on it, and
right.
It's like, it's done.
Yes.
And then you can never really see it like from fresh eyes.
Yes, exactly.
And then when the kid gets, you get to see it from the kid's perspective.
Yes, exactly.
And
yeah.
Add their twist on it. That's so cool.
Thank you.
I want to ask you, like, how long, because you were saying you like to let an idea sit. You get an idea, you get ideas all the time. And you know, there's that kind of thing where you don't want to work it too hard.
Yes,
you know?
Exactly.
And you also, like, you can just suck the life out of something real quick.
Yeah.
And do you feel like, do you wait for a moment where you're like, is there a mood that you're waiting for? Or like, when you have an idea and you're like, that's a good idea, I'm going to put it somewhere. Do you have like a drawer? Do you come back to
lots of notebooks?
Yeah.
I have paper notebooks, notebooks on my computer. I should probably have them all in one place, but you never know when an idea will strike, like a little conversation snippet or something. I work on multiple things at once just because a lot of waiting time.
Yeah.
So what I do is I'll revisit an idea, and if I'm still excited about it, or if it, or little elements of it keep coming up in my life, that's sort of a signal, you know, maybe it's time to work on that. Like, for example, the where are my books is the squirrels. Schools are part of my life, libraries, reading. And so when I started thinking about that, I thought, you know what I want? And also my current book that's coming out in September is I want to read all the books. That's mainly because I started thinking more about my childhood, you know, how much I love reading, because I don't know about you, but I found it hard to read during the pandemic.
It's hard to read now, too. Yeah. And it's getting, I'm just,
yeah.
in the past 6 months, getting that attention and focus back.
Yeah.
To read
but
for
I,
an hour, you know?
But I felt embarrassed because I'm always saying, read, 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 but during the pandemic, I just couldn't focus. It was terrible, and I thought, this is like what's going on, and I would just be reading terrible news on social media, which is not really good. And so what I found was, like, now I'm rediscovering my reading mojo. Like,
mm-hmm.
like now that things have calmed down a little bit and like my loved ones are okay. Well, I was mainly worried about my father, but I had some losses during the pandemic as other people. But I find for me, I need to build time to read. I know it sounds strange, but I used to read at night right before going to bed. Now a lot of times I'm too tired, so I'll read just a little bit. So now I'm actually trying to read first thing in the morning. I'll pick something up, like either poetry. It doesn't have to be kidlit, you know. It could be nonfiction, something inspirational. It could be a rereading a favorite novel or a new novel. But I'm trying to build in like 20 minutes. I have a timer, and that really begins the day right for me. Usually it's poetry, which is like gets me in the word mode. But also later in the day, I try to read in any format. Print is a favorite because it's something tactile. It's away from the lures of social media and other distractions. But also when I travel with my Kindle because I usually travel carry-on only.
Kindle's great.
When I have insomnia, which is actually frequently, I listen to audiobooks, or when I'm doing, you know, household chores, I listen to audiobooks. So I try to read widely and as much as possible. And since I started making, like, actually scheduling reading into every day, it's become easier and easier.
Well, it's a legitimate activity. And
yeah.
You think like, oh, it's only for the end of the day when I'm winding down. Like,
right,
no,
yeah.
you can give it some of your good hours,
yes,
too.
Yes, exactly.
Like,
yeah.
you don't have to just be bleary-eyed and have it put you to sleep.
Exactly,
you know,
yeah.
Like, I talked to Lauren Schimmel, who does a translator and a writer. And he's amazing. And he said, I start every day reading.
Yes, I actually listened to that podcast. Yeah, like,
how
I loved
inspiring
him.
Is that?
Yeah.
And I think I talked to Peter Brown said the same thing.
Like, yeah.
He reads before he starts illustrating. Yeah. Not because, I think because art happens on a bigger time.
Yes.
Than the now of the computer and online world.
I think that's so true. I try not to begin my day with email and social media because I don't know, it propels me into this feeling of everything being rushed. When I begin my day with a poem or reading even just a few pages of a favorite book, I don't know, it just puts me in a more mellow, open, creative mode where I can take things slowly. I can focus on the moment rather than all the things I need to do. Mm. Although there is a point later in the day, then I have to focus.
4 o'clock, yeah.
Yeah.
I better get the day's work done in the next 40 minutes.
Exactly.
No, I know what you're feeling. I always feel like when I start those days well, when you don't just go phone, computer, I feel like I'm living up in like the Swiss Alps or something. Like,
you know,
just hiking around. It feels that, it's that stark.
Yes.
When you're able to kind of reset your brain at the beginning of the day.
Yeah.
And orient your brain.
Exactly.
A slower reflect, because that's what reading is.
Yeah.
It's reflective.
It is. It is. And also, I find it really helps you understand other people's contexts, I find. Because I can't afford the time or money to visit every country or every culture. So I try not to read always the same type of book. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. But for me, I'm trying to read widely. And there's always new books coming up. I want to read all the books. And also, every time I hear award lists, even at this conference, my to-read pile is so huge right now. Because I went, Kate Messner, she did a session on revising her novel. And she used a lot of mentor texts. Oh, she's awesome. And
she's always good.
And she, all these mentor texts, I've read some of them, but some of them I hadn't. So by the end of this conference, I'm going to have so many books that I want to purchase or borrow from a library.
Well, I want to read all the books as the new book coming out in September. I want to leave with some final thoughts, if you have any. Is there anything more you want to talk about, like what's coming and what's exciting?
Yes, I am so excited about my new solo picture book, which is I Want to Read All the Books. And it's about a little girl who has a question. You know, she's looking out the window and she sees a drop of rain. I wonder where rain comes from. And her mom's there and obviously a reader. And so she offers her daughter a book. And Hannah loves the book. And so she's, I have more questions. And so she reads more books. And then she thinks, hey, you know, the more books I read, the more I'll know. Maybe I'll be able to know everything if I read all the books. And then her friends start lending her books. Her brother does. And then they go to a small library and then an indie bookstore and everything. And the more, but at some point, her mom takes her to this giant library, which I actually modeled after the Toronto Public Library, Metro Reference Library. And Hannah realizes, oh, I'm never going to be able to read all the books. But then she realized, you know, that's okay. Because even if I can't read all the books, I'll have fun trying. Plus, I can share books. Maybe I'm not supposed to give away the ending. I'm going to give away the ending anyway. But, you know, and so she starts her own book club, you know, and lists her friends. And so actually that a lot of it came from how I was when I was little, because, you know, as I mentioned, my parents used to take me to the public library every week. They would let me read anything I wanted. They did not say, read this, read that. So I'm so grateful for them for that. And so I came home with big piles of books, and I didn't like some of them. I liked some of them. But I really did think that someday as a grown up, I would be able to read all the books. But I remember how crushed I was. I really do. I'm never going to be able to read all the books, but you get over that. I didn't start a book club, unfortunately, but it's still fun trying to read all the books. But I have to emphasize, I am very, very grateful that I was able to, because I think that helped make me a reader, that my parents let me choose whatever book I wanted from the library.
That's all the time we have today on our program. On behalf of all of us at SCBWI, I'd like to thank Debbie for making the time to talk with us. If you've liked what you've heard, please subscribe to our totally free show and leave us some stars. Please head over to scbwi.org if you want to learn more about the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators. This episode was produced by Chelsea Kimiko Hall and edited by Samantha Thomas. And this podcast is made possible with support from the Authors Coalition of America. Thanks for listening this week, and we'll see you next week. So long.